You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
This hour, Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. All right, we're going to run through some of the highlights here. We're not going to, like, you know, torture you and make you relive every single Davante Adams catch. We will start here, though. Jacob Hollister getting lucky.
Marshawn Lynch, the single setback. A tight trips near side. Russell's going to throw on first down. Ball is caught on a crossing route by the tight end, Hollister, but the ball comes out. Was he on the ground? Was he on the ground? Packers say they have the ball.
After review of the play, the runner did fumble the ball. However, there's no evidence of a clear recovery by the defense.
That was so lucky.
Wow.
That was so lucky.
Incredibly lucky. I mean, if that would have started out that way and the Packers easily go up 14-0, I mean, yikes.
I got to tell you, Jacob Hollister at the end of the year got on my nerves a
really?
Lot.
Why?
I thought he was a fourth-string tight end.
I thought he was a very good – well, if Russell's going to go to him that often, he better haul the ball in and not fumble the ball like he had and get called for pre-snap penalties.
It's fair. I just – who else do you go to? You have Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and then just a bunch of dudes to choose from.
I would rather see Russell throw it incomplete than go to him.
Oh, come on.
Tom.
Come on.
Jacob Hollister also helped you win a game.
Get out of here. Jacob Hollister, he had...
You just
for
like him.
Well, one, yeah, I like him. But two, because he actually has produced. He's been a good football player for them.
I'm telling you, at the end of the year, he got on my nerves.
And I understand that. I fully understand that. You got to hold on to the ball. Can't have any pre-snap penalties, Tom. I'm with you all the way.
All right.
But he turned into a very nice third option for this Seahawk offense. And he came up a couple other times. He came up big with a couple other catches in big moments. So, look, Hollister is not going to be the front-line guy for this team moving forward in the future.
Does it seem
but
like-
he will be a good he'll be a good third tight end in receiving tight end in passing situations.
Look at the last three games, and I'm asking this, okay? Somebody can look this up. Who was Russell's first target in the last three games? I'm just curious.
I believe it was DK Metcalf.
Was it?
So DK, I think
against the Eagles it was Metcalf.
DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. It was one of those two.
Was Hollister not thrown to in the first series of each of the last like three or four games?
I'm pretty sure the first target. Oh, you mean just during the first series?
Well, I mean both, but yeah.
Yes.
If he's going to Hollister in the first series, that means he trusts him.
He does trust him, yes.
Okay.
He has a lot of trust in him, and I think for Hollister, when he gets hit like that, he is kind of a smaller body as in terms of a tight end, and so every hit that he takes, I mean, has great impact
on him. But that's the other thing. He's always like an inch short. And, all right, look, we can't spend four minutes on Jacob Hollister.
Easy.
All right, Wilson to Tyler
Still
Lockett.
Fresh.
Boom.
To the far side. Russ takes the shotgun snap, looks to the right, avoids one man, now throws down the middle. He's got Lockett, who makes the catch and is knocked off his feet at the 50-yard line. A flag down comes from the far side of the field. Might have been somebody trying to grab Tyler Lockett as he was crossing the field because he ran a long way to get there. Picked up 31 yards if the play stands.
I don't think this was the play, but there was a catch that Tyler Lockett made where he got absolutely leveled from right in front of him, and he stood right up. I don't know how he's still alive.
Was that in the fourth quarter?
I can't remember when it was.
It was probably the fourth quarter. I think it was a hit to Kevin King.
It was a deep pass.
Hit by Kevin King,
like right to left.
That's
down
coming
the
up.
Side
That's
line.
Later
oh,
on.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay, I'm mm-hmm. sorry.
Yeah, but Lockett was great with Wilson all day. He did a great job of running with Russell Wilson in scramble situations. And Tyler showed you that, hey, DK, although he is really taking off and emerging as an elite receiver in this league, that Tyler's still right there. He's still the number one guy in this offense and is a guy that Russell Wilson absolutely trusts in those types of scramble mode situations.
Speaking of scrambling.
Empty backfield for Russell out of the shotgun. Takes the snap. Four-man rush. Standing. Steps up. Got running room. First down. 40. 45. Midfield. Turns. Makes one man miss. Dives inside the 45 of the Packers. As Jair Alexander tripped him up, he's a little bit injured after putting Russell down on the ground, but Russell picks up 22.
I think it was one of the more encouraging things in both this game and last. If it was week one or two, I would have said this isn't sustainable to have him be your leading rusher. But all year we were questioning whether or not he could still be as mobile as he was. And he's a different kind of runner, but I think he's proved to you in these last two games that he is as elusive as ever.
He's definitely elusive. I thought last night he actually waited a little bit longer to take off, and eluding sacks and kind of running around backwards. It almost seemed like he was toying with the defenders at times before he actually decided to take off. I'm not really sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but gained 22 yards there, and then Marshawn drops in.
Lynch in the backfield. Lynch gets the handoff, bounces off a tackler. He fights. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks! From a yard out, Marshawn Lynch scores his third touchdown since unretiring and coming back to the team. He helped win a Super Bowl, and the Seahawks, on their opening drive of the second half, do exactly what they needed to do. Come out and score, and it's 21-9.
All right, so then the Packers went up 28-10. Seahawks came right back.
Russ takes it, slides to his right side, looking to the end zone, looking. Now he fires a dart. Touchdown, Seahawks! Tyler Lockett slams that ball into the turf as Russ gets outside and waits for his receiver to uncover in the back of the end zone. From 7 yards out, Seattle answers back to the answer of the Packers, and it's 28-16.
At that point, it just felt like from the very first drive when they went and scored, it was like, okay, if this defense can stop them in Green Bay, we got a chance. They give up a touchdown. Russell Wilson and this offense, they don't go away, and they're scratching and clawing and fighting in this one. And you just see the emotion on Russell, on Tyler. These guys were not going to quit the entire game, and they still believed, despite all of it, that they thought they were going to come back and win that game. You could just feel it from the offensive players.
And this is the one I was talking about before with Lockett.
Jumping into the neutral zone is Clark. Free play for Russ. Going to throw it up over the top. Ball is caught. Great catch by Lockett. How did he hang on to that ball? He was hammered down to the ground by King, but Russ hung on, and it's a free play. And King is the one who stays down on the near sideline, takes a knee after trying to level Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, how did he get the worst of that?
Is that the one where Tyler Lockett gets really fired up and looks at the Packers sideline?
Yes.
Yes.
That was the most fired up I've ever seen Lockett in my life.
And he was like that the entire game, too. And it was interesting to see him be that way. And I think he was extra motivated to show what he could do and that he was still, you know, in everybody's mind that he's still the number one guy in this offense. But that just shows the incredible toughness of Lockett to take that hit. And at first it looked like it was a clear helmet to helmet, but his hand was actually in the way of Kevin King's helmet from hitting him. Thank goodness, because that was a throw by Russell Wilson that was in the right place, but lofted it just enough for Kevin King to be able to have a big impactful hit. He almost kind of lodged the ball and secured it into Tyler's chest, though, the way he hit him.
Here's Travis Homer making a big impact on that same drive.
The play fake. Hits his back foot, steps up in the pocket, throws far flat. Homer makes a catch, turns upfield 10, 5, knocked out of bounds. How did Russell get rid of that ball? Just slipped the ball to the far side, and Homer, who leaks out of the backfield, makes the catch on the sidelines, races up the sidelines for 16 yards, knocked out of bounds at the 5.
Plenty of time to go. Something you want to say about that?
Oh, I was just going to say, it's always a bummer because with a loss, it changes the way you talk about a game afterward, and you miss some important points. Just it's the end of the season, and it feels like people are just having a hard time looking past the negatives. But I think that, A, the combined tackle by the Griffin brothers and then also Travis Homer's play in this game were two really encouraging things.
I completely agree. Here's Marshawn got in once more. Russell got sacked on the two-point conversion attempt. I didn't think that was a big deal. Did you guys think they should have gone for two there? I could have gone either way. But if they had kicked and they had been down 28-24, that would have been fine.
It didn't affect anything. Right. So that was in those situations where if you go for two and you get the two-point conversion, it's a positive thing, but it doesn't hurt you if you don't get
it. If you go for it and you miss and then they kick a field goal, now you got to score and you have to get a two-point conversion.
To tie. Yes.
Okay. And Stacey, you just mentioned that play by the Griffins.
Takes the shotgun snap. Seattle rushes for it. Blitz is coming. They get to him. And it's Shaquem Griffin who gets there. Shaquille was the brothers Griffin met at Aaron Rodgers. And they buried him. And what a scene. And you can hear 12s in the stands cheering the twin brothers. I got to check to see if Shaquem, it is his first career sack. Way to go, youngster.
Yeah, Shaquem got the credit for the full sack. Shaquille was essentially there just to kind of finish it off. But then...
That was probably, guys, that was probably, if not one of the coolest play of the game. I mean, to watch that happen, you know, those two guys, how inspirational they've been, their story. I mean, so cool to see them do that on the NFL stage. And it was funny when they got the sack, both of them were running like crazy and celebrating all that. I don't think they realized that they got the sack with each other. And then all of a sudden they look over each other like, wait, that was you? And then they do their handshake like 20-30 yards away from the original sack. I mean, it was just such a cool
special
moment.
There's a video of Aaron Rodgers looking upset that he got sacked. And in the background, kind of fuzzy because they're not in focus, or the Griffin brothers celebrating the sack.
Here's Devontae Adams, who absolutely torched the secondary all night.
Rodgers takes the shotgun snap. Looks. He's going to throw. He's got Devontae Adams, who makes the catch over the top of Ugo Amadi. Oh, goodness. The one thing you could not have happen is to give up a big play over the top for the first down. And the two youngsters, Lano Hill and Ugo Amadi, were on coverage to that side. And Adams beats them both for 32 yards and a Packer first down.
Jake, how'd that happen?
Okay, there's two things that you could have done differently in this situation. One, you put Shaq Griffin on Devontae Adams. Put your best corner and coverage guy on their best receiver. That's it, right? People were asking, why was Diggs not back there at the free safety? Well, the reason why he was not was they went into dime package, and they had Bradley McDougal on Jimmy Graham, and then they had Quandre Diggs on Aaron Jones. So from that standpoint, good on them to put Quandre Diggs on Aaron Jones, because he is a threat as a receiver, even from the backfield. You have to put Shaq Griffin on him. And if you're not going to, what Ugo Amadi did was he gave up the outside. And really what ends up happening is that's bad ball and bad coaching, because what you should be doing is teaching Ugo Amadi to funnel that guy to your free safety. So your free safety either has to help over the top of Ugo Amadi and double Devontae Adams, or your nickel corner has to play outside leverage and funnel him into the middle of the field of the free safety. They didn't do either, and it's a easy pitch and catch and a recognition by Aaron Rodgers changing the route at the line of scrimmage and capitalizing on it.
Finally, the dagger.
Rodgers awaits the snap. He takes it. Here comes the blitz. Rodgers steps, throws over the middle. Jimmy Graham makes the catch, and he's going to have a first down at the 35-yard line. Lano Hill made the tackle, but I think they got the spot just across the line to make. They needed 9. They got 10.
The ruling of the field stands as call. First down and back.
I feel like that game deserved something more momentous than just a review of a spot, you know? It was such a disappointing way to end a game. It's not even like a DK Metcalf. It was clearly caught. They're over it. That's the first down. Ice the game. It was the refs come out, and there's some confusion. Then they come back out. Okay, we found additional footage, and it's still a conversion.
I thought that initially they had gotten it. I only didn't when I saw a handful of replays, and that still photo that somebody has out today on Twitter where it shows clearly that he's behind the TV artificial line, but perhaps not the actual line that's on the field.
Correct. And we're also, those two aren't necessarily accurate depictions, because the only chains that matter are not the first down marker or even the other one. It's on the other side of the field. The actual chains are on the other side of the field. So we don't really have a great angle as to what that looked like. But Tom, you said it last week. Did that infuriate you that Jimmy Graham was the guy that caught the ball to kind of seal the game?
You know what? There was already so much else going on, and that I didn't have time to worry about the fact that it was Jimmy Graham. You know, I mean, if you would, did I say that beforehand?
Yeah, you said if Jimmy Graham made like the game winning play, or they lost because Jimmy Graham went off, that would really, really make you.
If Jimmy Graham had the night that Devontae Adams had, that would have upset me.
But all of Jimmy Graham's catches were on third down to convert a third down.
I don't care.
They were big plays.
They
were big plays, but he didn't have the yard. He didn't torch him like Adams did.
That's he had a great game.
Yeah, he didn't torch him like Adams did. But, yeah, he had a pretty good game against his former team.
Four downs.
This is Four Down Territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
So what was the plan to stop Devontae Adams, and why didn't it work?
what was the plan?
Yeah.
No, I don't really think they had a plan to really take Devontae Adams out. Like I said, four downs on Friday, I said, look, the player that has to step up in this game who hasn't been playing well was Trey Flowers. And Trey Flowers is a guy that's going to get tested and tested often from Aaron Rodgers after they watched the film. And they went after him for sure. They got him on a double move. First touchdown of the game, it was a slant and go. Trey Flowers bit on it. And they continue to go after him all game long. And from that standpoint, as soon as Lazard goes out of the game, to me, Shaquille Griffin should be following Devontae Adams throughout the entire game. And they didn't make that adjustment. And Devontae Adams and Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers made sure that they capitalized on that opportunity to really pick on the weak points of this defense, which was Trey Flowers. And then you saw Ugo Amadi covering him in the most critical situations. And so to me, because of that lack of adjustment, I think is a big reason why we're sitting here talking about the Seahawks not advancing into the NFC Championship.
Second down. Stacey, what's your biggest takeaway from Pete's post-game presser?
I think I was struck by his emotion, but also by a comparison he made. In this clip right here, he compared this year's Seahawks to another Seahawks team.
This is, I think, is the start of this team. I think this is, it feels like 2012 all over again. And y'all can, I don't want to talk about that game. You can go back and figure it out. But this was so similar.
So I was actually writing a separate recap for this game, and it was just going to be a by-the-numbers kind of look. But then I thought, you know what's so much more interesting than just looking at how they fared on third down or whether or not they played well against Aaron Jones, which they did. They held him to under 100 yards and actually played the run pretty well. It was talking about them moving forward, specifically with this comparison that Pete Carroll made. That struck me about this post-game press conference, which was a pretty short one for Pete Carroll. But he was, I don't think this was coach speak. I think he was very serious about this team reminding him so much of that comeback. And the two comebacks were similar. Seattle was down by about three scores at the half, came back in it with four touchdowns against Atlanta back in 2012 with three touchdowns this past weekend against Green Bay. In both cases, ended with pretty heartbreaking fashion. I think the big difference is that the strength of that team was the defense. And you had Russell Wilson, who had a lot of promise, and this team clearly had faith in. But the defensive starters were really the difference in that season and in the seasons moving forward. So even though they had yet to lead the team, lead the league in defense, they would do that the following year, they still finished fourth overall. So their defense was a strength. That was the strength of the team. It's tough to compare it as the same thing with this year's team because they don't have those pieces in place. And I don't think that you can just look at it and say, all right, we've got the right ingredients, let's move forward. I think you have to make moves this offseason to get there. And I also think that you need to reconsider where the strength of your team lies.
You see Pete crying last night when he was talking about Russell?
He seemed really emotional.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't crying. He was emotional, though.
Yeah.
You're right.
I think he was really touched by when he says kind of the heart that people had on the sidelines, I think he genuinely means that. I think he was touched by the belief that all the players had that they could come back. It's Pete Carroll's, I think, dream football game is the idea of coming back into it. He loves a good football story, and that was really close to becoming one.
By the way, Jacob Hollister's last five games of the season, disaster.
Disaster?
Disaster.
Terrible. Really? What are you looking at his last five games of the season?
This guy just sent me something on Twitter.
El Ria?
Yeah.
What does it say?
It's good stuff. It's third down.
You have to show me during the break.
Did you agree with Pete's decision to punt?
Yeah.
On the final offensive possession?
Yes, absolutely.
I think we all did.
I absolutely agree with it. The only time, like I said earlier on the show, for 5 seconds, I thought, man, keep the ball in Russell Wilson's hand. It's fourth down. He's the one that got you to this point so far, but that was just emotions talking. He was the guy. He was making all the moves and getting them in that position. But fourth and 11, that's not an ideal situation. And at that point, if you don't convert, you lose the game. Guaranteed game is lost. By them punting the football, it gives you an opportunity on the defensive side of the ball. And people can say, well, the defense, they hadn't done this and this. I understand that, but still, they came up big over the last couple possessions in that game, and the momentum swing was to the Seahawks. And you have to understand that Matt LaFleur handled the end of the game wrong. The Seahawks had three timeouts left, and there was 2:32 left in the game. They run, then they try and pass on second and eight. Incomplete pass. That stops the clock at 2:26. So now you're third and eight with 2:19 left to go in the game, and they decide to pass the football. If that's incomplete, now you're sitting there 2 minutes, 10 seconds left. You punt the ball. The Seahawks have one play before the two-minute drive, and they've got two timeouts left. So that's the ideal situation that they put themselves in. They had two opportunities, third and long. They didn't come up with it, and it wasn't the decision by Pete to punt the football that lost them that game.
Was it Malik Turner that lost them the game?
Yeah, him dropping that football did not help. That was bad, bad, bad. Wide open, right in the chest. You got to catch that one.
It's funny, if he makes that catch and they win the game, we're not talking about any of the problems they have on
defense. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Today.
We're replaying the Griffin brothers getting that sack over and over again.
Exactly. Fourth down. Will Marshawn Lynch be back next year?
You have to really consider it. Here's the thing, is it might sound crazy, but you've got Chris Carson, Rashad Penny. Those two guys injured. And Rashad Penny coming off an ACL. We don't know what the hip injury for Chris Carson's timetable looks like. They think he'll be back for training camp. But you have to have bodies. And if Marshawn Lynch is willing to play that third running back or that third or fourth running back and have that mentorship role, I wouldn't mind having Marshawn Lynch back. Knowing that he's preparing an entire season, getting his body right, I think it's a really good option for these guys at this point in stage, knowing that he's not going to be a guy that you're hoping to rely on, that Chris Carson, Rashad Penny are going to be back and contributing in a big way for you in 2020. If you don't do that, then you've got to go to the draft in the late rounds.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacy. So, folks, what's on tap?
Yes, we have a game tonight.
Big one.
A big game.
Unfortunately, it's not SMU.
Yeah, if only.
If only the Mustangs.
I mean, SMU basketball is what you're talking about, right?
Right, yes. Okay.
Instead, though, we have the national title game, LSU taking on Clemson, 5 o'clock on 710 ESPN Seattle. Boy, this is going to be a big one. This LSU's got this one all the way, don't they?
I think LSU has it. They are the most complete team, the most dominant team, and they're playing in the Superdome right in their backyard.
I'd like to see them win.
I can't imagine them not winning. However, Clemson is undefeated. You've got Trevor Lawrence as your quarterback. You can't count those guys out, but I just think LSU is the better football team.
You know what? I'm picking Clemson to win this game. I've seen this kid Lawrence play a bunch of times.
This Lawrence kid you're talking about?
It always comes down to quarterback moxie in this game, especially if it's close. We've seen it with Deshaun Watson. I'm picking Clemson to win.
Yeah, this scrappy Clemson team, they've only won 20.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The defending champions, a real
underdog bunch.
Well, Curtis, you know, I mean, we joke about it, but, like, why is everybody picking LSU to win this game? Are they that much better?
I think they're also more likable. People love Burrow, and they love Coach O.
They love Coach O and all that. But
Coach O.
But they have been the most dominant team in the SEC and to me, all season long. So I just think they've got a lot going for them.
Did you hear me and Curtis? We have an idea that this game should instead be, if you win, you keep the rights to the Tiger mascot, and the loser has to come up with a different
and
one.
And also the Death Valley Stadium nickname.
So you're playing for something bigger than just a national championship.
Well, Clemson should be changing that anyway. Because Death Valley belongs to LSU.
Well,
that's
we'll
a controversial
take. They would
take
say otherwise.
Yes.
I know they would, but they're wrong. All of them.
Wow. But you're still picking them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just don't,
just to be clear.
They don't deserve Death Valley, but they should win this game. Absolutely. All right, look, we're going to hear from Pete Carroll next. But if you want to give us a call, let us know where you think the Seahawks are headed. Want to say anything about the game last night, 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Aren't we ever going to get any better? We asked that question all year long. Is this team a Super Bowl team? In the backs of your minds, didn't you know that the answer was no?
Just if I'm being honest with myself,
just ask yourself.
Yeah. They actually exceeded my expectations.
Yeah,
I thought they'd be a 9-win team.
Right, but that didn't mean that they were necessarily going to the Super Bowl.
No, but I think that people, the right combination, the perfect team, isn't going to go to the Super Bowl every single year.
A lot of chance involved. You're right.
This is where I thought they would be. I thought that they would be an improved team from last year and that they would be able to get a little bit deeper into the playoffs. Just based off of what they had roster wise, but the fact that you are so close and there's a couple plays here or there that you could look at. I mean, gosh, it just is incredible to think that they actually had a chance of really advancing. You know, it's a tough pill to swallow coming in on this Monday. But ultimately, when you look at big picture, what I was thinking about and what we were thinking about before the season, it's probably about right.
At least they didn't get suspended for cheating and beating barrel drums or whatever.
just wait, Tom. Just wait.
God. I'm trying to imagine how that would be worked in, but
with a loud crowd, like
somehow, somehow they're like, yeah, the Seahawks were banging on trash cans to convey calls from. I don't know how it would work, but I'm interested in this.
Mike's in Langley. Go ahead, Mike. What do you got?
Hi. Good afternoon. I wanted to get your opinions on. I know that we've talked a little bit about Coach Norton today. And I think the thing, he seems to be a really good fundamentals coach and has all the basics. It seemed to me throughout the year that in many games with specific opponents, it seemed like the Hawk defense was scouted a lot as far as its tendencies. And it seemed like they got taken advantage of a lot, especially in the backfield. What do you guys say to that?
Mike, the thing that I would say is that in terms of this defense, I don't think this defense did enough to put themselves in the best positions game to game. I think that
with the talent that they had,
whether it was coming into this game and making the adjustment, okay, we're gonna put pressure and we're gonna blitz in this game. The only time that I ever saw them make a game to game adjustment like that was the San Francisco 49er game the first time around. They changed their approach based off of that opponent that they were facing. Outside of that, I have not seen them do that.
Maybe a little bit against Tampa Bay.
And they more sat back and played conservative and let things happen to them that I think that really was their undoing at times. And instead of coming in with proper in-game game plans, whether it was personnel matchups or, all those things combined, I think that's where they really struggled this season.
Joe is in Portland. What's up, Joe? How you doing?
Hey, Jake's kind of indirectly touched upon my big point. There are some players that, quite honestly, need to go. Malik Turner, Ziggy Ansah, ProSize. But I think a coaching change is paramount. Ken Norton must go. The defense has played soft for the last 2 years to the point that even mediocre teams to come in and push this defense around, and they just don't make the adjustments on defense that they should be making. That's all I've got, actually.
Thanks, Joe. We appreciate it. Again, look, it comes down to one of three things: personnel, scheme, or both. If they had the personnel to operate within this, whether you want to call it a soft system, base system, it should be able to work. If you had one or two pass rushers, or you had one or two ball hawks in the secondary, you telling me they don't win that game last night?
Well, they had one pass rusher. They need two or three.
You need more than one.
They need two or three. And they also...
And he was hurt, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Right, Clowney, yeah. He was hurt. Yes, exactly. He's playing through injury. So I think that that's part of it. I do think personnel is something that has to be considered in all of this. You look at Trey Flowers. You look at the fact that Lano Hill was out there. You're playing a rookie nickel corner in Ugo Ahmadi, who I really like, but they waited a long time to get him involved in their scheme. You had Cody Barton out there. So personnel is definitely part of the equation. However, going back to that same thing I just mentioned, I don't feel like there was enough good in-game adjustments or personnel matchups that they had that really forced the issue for other teams.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Howard's in Seattle. How you doing, Howard?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
A couple things. One, I want to say I think this team exceeded all expectations. I think I had them like 8-8 at the beginning of the year. And really, I had given up on them in some games, but I was excited, really. They actually captured my imagination throughout the season. So that's the first thing. I did think they exceeded expectation. And the thing that's missing for me is a swagger. Some kind, you know, like that when they had, Richard Sherman and they had, the other guy, you know, the other guy from Stanford as well, who was the receiver, can't remember his name, but
Baldwin?
You know,
yeah, Doug Baldwin.
Pardon me?
Baldwin?
Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, Baldwin. Sorry. Thank you. You know, they had they after the 2012 season, when they had beat the 49ers in that, playoff game, they had a swagger to them, man. There was they knew something was going, and Marshawn was there. And I think that's a missing, a swagger of some kind. And it has to be built. I get all that. And I'm hoping that they're on the way to do that. And the third thing that I saw was, you know, the thing that really killed the season was injuries. Yeah. And I don't know if it's league-wide or what, but, you know, I think the Seahawks need to do something with regards to body preparation to minimize injuries, knowing that injuries are going to occur, but how do you sustain a successful season in the face of, you know, dealing with injuries? And I think that's a question they have to address.
I think the fact that they got to a divisional round and almost beat a better Green Bay Packers team, a healthier Green Bay Packers team, with the number of injuries they have is exactly how you deal with that many injuries. You rarely win a Super Bowl with that many injuries. You were down three starting running backs, including your 1,000-yard running back and part of the core of your offense. You were down left guard. You were to a third-string left guard. You were down a center. You were down a tight end. You were down another tight end after Ed Dixon was placed on IR. So you're down to a guy that was on your practice squad and a starting tight end that wasn't on your team at all to start the season. I think the fact that they went as far as they did is impressive. And I don't know how you pit on a coaching staff something like a fractured hip for Chris Carson, a broken arm for CJ Procise. I could understand saying, well, CJ Procise is injury prone or Chris Carson hasn't finished out a season, but those are injuries that no amount of strength and conditioning can prevent. You can't prevent a broken bone.
You can't, but the fact that they got as far as they did with an offense that had so many injuries is a miracle.
That's what I'm saying.
It is. But their defense still can't stop anybody.
No, but that's not the right. That's two different things, though.
Yeah.
It is, but that okay. But if we're talking about going forward and saying, okay, what has to be fixed? The offense just needs to get healthy. It doesn't really need to be fixed or reworked. The defense needs to be reworked.
The defense needs to be worked, but offensively, you've got to add more. You got to add
really?
Some more fire. Yeah, you got to give Russell Wilson the absolute best.
I think you need to start faster.
You've
too.
Got to.
You need Josh Gordon, is what you need.
You've got
exactly.
to. You got to give him the absolute best, and I think that this is going to be an interesting discussion as we get into it in the offseason. But yeah, there's going to be a question about what you decide to do philosophically.
We sum it up next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
That wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Stacy brings up a great point in the break here. I'm not sure actually if this is your point, but it got me wondering. If they had had a full team, a full slate of healthy players, do you think that they could have gotten any farther than this round?
Because we disagreed. Because I think they could have. I think if you had, think about it, if you had Chris Carson, a healthy Dwayne Brown, Mike Iupati, a healthy Clowney, Kendricks, even Al Woods back out there.
Yeah.
Say you even had Josh Gordon out there.
Disley.
I think it makes a huge difference. And I think we were talking about what makes a successful season. And what makes something, our fans, someone texted in whether they felt it was unfair to be delusional for expecting it to get to a Super Bowl. I don't think you're delusional for thinking you can get to a Super Bowl, but like Jake mentioned, to think it's not a successful season is the wrong approach to take with this, I think, because you far exceeded expectations.
Especially about this roster.
This roster right now. Think of how injured you were.
Yeah, how injured you were, and even with the injuries, I still think if you think that it was a failure that this group didn't get to the Super Bowl with this roster, I think you're a little bit of a homer and not really looking at the reality of this team. I think this roster was built to be around this right now, the divisional round to maybe the championship if Russell Wilson plays at an elite level, which he did and still overcame all those injuries. But, I mean, you got to look at it. Justin Britt, Mike Iupati, Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, Will Dissly. Mm-hmm. I'll just leave right there on offense.
Right.
To me, that makes a huge difference in the way that that ball game is one played and also probably the chance of you starting better on offense in mm-hmm. the first half, your ability to play the style that you want. I think the other thing is that Joey Hunt was getting pushed around over the last two playoff games right back into Russell Wilson's lap. You're down to your third left guard in Phil Haynes.
So are you telling me that Pete Carroll built this team thinking, I can get away with this defense if I have my full complement of healthy offensive players?
I don't think what
you're saying is, they would go further if they were healthier on offense.
I think they would have, but I'm also sure that Pete Carroll, I would wager that Pete Carroll felt this defense would perform a lot better than it did this season.
Yes.
Honestly, I thought so too.
Yes.
But it wouldn't have mattered because they already got to this point with this defense and with this depleted offense. But what I'm hearing from you guys is that if the offense were healthier, they could have gotten even further,
yes,
even with the defense that they had.
I think so.
The defense, oddly, is irrelevant.
Yes, I agree with
that.
Well,
I don't know if with that defense you would have won a Super Bowl.
Having one of your best...
So you're drawing the line somewhere.
Well, yeah, because I think you run into the problem that Atlanta had in 2016 when they were... Am I getting the year wrong? 2016, no. Right? When they were elite on offense and then you... 2017. And then you couldn't stay in it because your defense faltered.
It could come back to bite you at some point, whether that's the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. But I do think they advance past the Green Bay Packers if they have their offense healthy. I do fully believe that. Despite all of that, they still and I come back to your point, Tom, of the defense. The defense has really been the Achilles heel for this team all season long. And you bring back Michael Kendricks and Al Woods, I don't really think that makes a whole bunch of a difference for you in terms of how your defense performs. Ultimately, it's what you're doing on the back end. It's how you're able to get to the quarterback. Those are two things that Al Woods and Michael Kendricks don't really have that much of an effect on with how they were approaching their defensive scheme. So there's definitely going to be a lot to dive into in terms of looking at this team and the decisions that they should be making heading into formulating this 2020 roster.
What's the biggest debate going to be going forward? Is it going to be what between like all of us? Is it going to be whether or not to sign Clowney?
I think it's going to be the debate I'm most interested in is where does the team put its stock moving forward?
Yes.
If you want to be like 2012, do you say, all right, we're going to mimic that defense we had and we're going to beat exactly that team? Or do you say, wait a minute, the quarterback we have now is the same quarterback, but he is better, he's more important, he's more impactful, and we need to add around him. Can you do both? You have a lot of cap space.
Yeah.
You can add on defense and also get more protection up front. But how do you do that? I think that's the debate to me that is most interesting.
You sign Jadeveon Clowney, and then next August you go back and you get Josh Gordon again.
is that how it's going to work?
Totally. When
is he available?
We don't know.
We don't know.
That's going to be a wait-and-see process in terms of when the NFL – I mean, it's up to the NFL, honestly, to reinstate him. To me, he's an outlier situation. He's a guy in the periphery that they're going to make a ton of decisions, and if he just happens to be ready and available for this team, that's going to be like the extra cherry on top because they're not counting on him in terms of their plans and how they're going about the offseason.
Until they have to. I mean, you brought up the point, you would have rather seen Josh Gordon catching the ball that Malik
yes.
Turner missed.
Yes.
So it's a cherry on top until it becomes the most important catch of the season.
Exactly, but I also think that they should be making moves to where the importance of Josh Gordon being on this roster isn't going to make or break your situation. It isn't going to come down to affect you where
right.
your fourth or fifth receiver is now making the catch.
Right. So, was the most important catch of the season Malik Turner's drop, or was it the 32-yard
exactly.
completion to Devontae Adams?
That's going
to
be the biggest debate. What is the philosophy moving forward with this team? Is it offensive-driven? Is it defensive-driven? And we'll wait and see. We'll debate it out.
That sounds like an excellent tease for tomorrow's program. It's been Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.